Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. That's my mom out there. That's the only person in the audience. Is that amazing? She really has that kind of enthusiasm. Thanks.
She can really clap.
She knows how to clap, man, I'll tell you. When it comes to her baby, man, she's out there. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which has shrunk as we speak. The GSO, that's not the KGB, but the General Service Organization of Alcoholics Anonymous, have produced a sponsorship book, one-on-one sponsorship. First time in 78 years. It comes through the grapevine. It's $10.99, $17.24, shipping, handling, and license, and all the rest of the fees. $17 to get it in your hands. The grapevine needs the money. They're always in a financial crush. So I recommend it highly. I haven't gotten it yet. I looked at it. Our inner group recently had a little shindig, and I got to see a copy of what the book looked like. Very interesting stories, which is what's known, what the grapevine does. And it looked like interesting how to find a sponsor. The reason why this is so earth-shattering to the recovery community, that they had never done this agreed information before in 78 years of existence. Wow. So evidently sponsorship is coming to the forefront of the addiction recovery communities. A change is afoot, my friends. It's a change afoot. So take a look at it. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Alabama, as a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families. And I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation, so does the country, and so does the world. Most of the problems we have today, socially, criminally, based on children who did not receive correct principles while they were growing up. They grew up on the mean streets. We used to call them latchkey kids. Nobody's home. And there they are. So where do they go? They go to the gangs and they go to the groups. And what do they do for entertainment? Well, they do drugs, you know. They do drugs. They get a little alcohol. Kids like to get high. They want to get a buzz. They want to interact with each other. A lot of peer pressure, sex, you know, sexual immorality, big deal with kids today. The girls are auditioning for boys. We just keep going further down the rabbit hole. The family is the bulwark of keeping this thing, not the schools. The schools can't do this. So what happens with Harold, comes in after the fact. He tries to mend families, which is a tough act. It's a tough thing to do. The adults are rough. The kids don't want to be bothered. And society as a whole is weakened, and if not threatened. You go to the prisons, most of the people in the prisons are there because of drugs and alcohol. The career criminal, there's some, but there's not all that many. Most of these crimes are done crimes of passion, crimes of opportunity, where drugs and alcohol was the fuel of choice. So Harold does this kind of work to try to pull some of these families together. Sort of like a starfish thrower. A red tide comes in, there's millions of starfish on the beach, and there's a guy out there and he's tossing back one at a time. And of course the question is, hey, there's millions of them. You're never going to get them all. No, but Harold gets as many as he can. And you know, that's what we do at Rum Radio. We can't get them all, but we get out the information and we save the ones we can. And so if you did that, you know what? We might save a couple starfish in the process. Harold, how you doing tonight?
Well, thank you, Joseph, for that great introduction. I'm doing great. I'm really blessed. And this week has been a really interesting week, kind of a difficult week. A lot of people coming in early recovery, but they have switched addictions. And I'm seeing a lot of couple forcing. And what many people don't know is that, of course, 50% of marriages end in divorce. 50% of the divorces involve sex addiction, porn or something. One of the fellows explained that he was a latchkey kid, and he discovered when he got home from school, age five, you know, kindergarten, first grade, he discovered his dad's stack of Playboys and the stack of videos, the porn videos, so he would rush home from school and watch dirty videos until other people got there, and he would hide it. Yeah, at 5 years old. So there's a lot of addiction out there, a lot of drinking. Most of the kids start with drinking, then they branch out into other things, and the kids have so much stress these days. It's just amazing to me how stressed out all the kids are. There's so much anxiety. I consider it a privilege to work with these folks. We get a lot of good work done, plant a lot of seeds, and God makes the seeds grow. So I appreciate being on the show, and I want to tell our listeners, folks, Joseph does not make money from this radio show or his website, rumradio.org. In fact, he's sunk a lot of money into it, establishing it and keeping it going. It's dedicated to the idea that there's nothing better than one drunk working with another. It'll keep them both sober. So I admire his dedication and tenacity. He'll provide some information about how many listeners we have, how many clicks on the website. It's a great work. It works when other approaches don't. And I want to express my gratitude to Joseph for getting this whole thing going. So thank you, Joseph, for that opportunity.
Well, you're welcome, Harold. That's very nice of you. I also like to give out, if there's anyone out there and you would like to call in, we're going to have an interview. If you want to talk to the interviewee, John Lloyd, it's about interventions, but he's going to be telling his story. If you have any questions about that, the call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, in New Jersey, it's 949-534-0621. In Bangladesh, it's 9. Get it. Okay, so before we introduce John and his work and his story, I'd like to start the show with a prayer. And it's the third step prayer. It's one of the basic prayers. Oh, by the way, this is not AA. This is not CA, NA, or any of the other A's. Actually, it is one of the A's. It's closer to Paranoids Anonymous. where nobody will tell you. The problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. This is Rum Radio. We're not affiliated in the sense with AA. We do that because it's one of our traditions in AA. It's 11. The 11th tradition says that anonymity in press, radio, and films, and it's about ego. So if all of a sudden the spiritual giant that's speaking to you right now all of a sudden decides to take a drink down the road, somebody could say, see, I told you, it really doesn't work. But you know what? It works for me. As long as I stay sober, it worked 100%. How it worked for you, I don't know. But that's how we do. We like to keep the spiritual principles on Rum Radio. And I think that's important because God goes first with everything with us. You know, I tell people this is a collaboration with God, 101% collaboration. God does 101%, and I showed up. And this is the way we present this information. We do this as a service for the love of the program and for the love of God. So, you know, we try to stay in maximum service to God and our fellows. It's been given to us to give to you. So take it with us, with that spirit, and we'll both benefit from the interaction. When I get a new sponsee, and this is the life's blood of AA, is the newcomer. Just like the old timer is the backbone, but relapse is the soul, because there's nothing more tormented than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. So when I get a newcomer, the new man, what I do is it's called a prospect, sales term, someone with a good possibility of success. When I see that it's possible, he gets a beginner's chip. It's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. He's taking that walk up. He realizes there's a problem. No solution until there's a problem. I got no stinking problem. What I have is no stinking solution. So he's agreed that there's a problem. He's gotten his chip, and that's the guy I'm going after. So I go up to him, and after he gets that, and after we close, usually with the Lord's Prayer or some kind of chant to acknowledge it's a form of benediction to be grateful that we've accomplished this meeting and there's a benefit derived thereof. And the first thing I ask him is, have you had enough? If he's had enough, he knows what I'm talking about. If he hasn't, he'll usually ask the question, what do you mean? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough anxiety? Have you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough? Yes or no? Well, at that point, he's probably going to say yes. He's not just telling me, subliminal. He's agreeing to it. Okay. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? That's fairly self-explanatory. Making that commitment. Okay, yes, I'm willing to go to any length. I'm going to do the deal. Like Dr. Bob said to Bill, when it was his day, he said, I'm going to go through with this. That's what I'm asking. You're willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes. And I tell him, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. The first thing I need you to do is answer Clancy's 7 questions. They're on the website. Really good questions, just 7 questions. They're under the How to Find the Sponsee tab, drop down on the sponsorship board on the navigation board. Drop down, you'll see it, How to Find the Sponsee. Click it, scroll down a little bit, Clancy's 7 questions. Print them out. Have them in your pocket if you want to get a sponsee. Preparation. When preparation meets opportunity, you know what we call that? Luck. Be prepared, and the opportunity will appear. When the teacher is ready, the student will appear. So be prepared. Okay, so now you hand them the class. I need you to answer these 7 questions. They're not supposed to, do a fourth step. Fourth step is an inventory. This has nothing to do with the fourth step. This is just an agreement that he's going to take a simple action, that he's going to agree to taking simple instruction and doing a simple action. Let's see what the length looks like. What you're doing with this is you're qualifying the prospect. Again, a sales term. You got to qualify him. Is he does he have a need? Does he have the ability? Does he have the willingness? Does he have the desire? And this is going to indicate those things as we qualify the prospect. Not yet a sponsee, prospect. So the next day, I need you to answer these, and I need them back tomorrow. Put them on right now. Let's get them. Let's hit the deck running. See, to me, it's always can thorough Rob timely. We're coming to the agreement that timely is essential. And that more people will gain a benefit by being timely, getting through the steps as quickly as possible and still remaining timely to the understanding. But timely is really important. Get them through, because there's nothing so more tormented than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. Even if they go out after they've worked all 12 steps, they'll know their way home. And their best chance they have of sobriety is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. So I get them back tomorrow, two things. I'll either get them back or I won't get them back. If I do get him back, he's taken the simple instruction. Now he's a sponsee, and I give him, okay, let's go. We take it from there. If I don't get him back, two things have happened. He's either not ready or he's not ready for me. That every sponsor, I don't think that's true, but in a sense, personalities or how people approach you has a lot to do with your ability to maintain and gain an intimate relationship. Intimacy is the ability to share one's reality without fear of judgment or change. So we're going to have an intimacy. If the personalities don't fit, if I'm too aggressive for him like that, it's okay. And then he needs somebody else. And I'll even help you try to find someone else if that's the case. But I don't believe there's a unicorn of sponsors. I don't believe the dating scenario of sponsorship. I think it's really important to work with someone who's worked the steps. And then we take it from there. You can always fire your sponsor and go get another one. They don't know any of this. Okay, so the first thing I said, you got to get a home group. And in the home group, I want you to get a list of men. Men with men, women with women. Why? Well, it's easy to relate to. A man is easy to relate to a man, and a woman is easier to relate to a woman. One, two. And then, like I said, the sponsorship-sponsee relationship is very intimate. So it can easily be easily misconstrued when an intimacy is like that. If you can't get the same gender, you're out on an island and there's only one other person there and you need a sponsor, fine, great. Okay, the key is you work the steps. So you can always change sponsors if it's not working out, but usually the new person doesn't know any of this. So they count on the sponsor to give them sufficient information so he can make legitimate decisions on his own. Not up for the sponsor to run this guy's life. You get the list from a home group. Get a home group and get which is important. It's a lifeline list, and people he'll get to know. This will be the fellowship that'll grow up around him. He gets the list, and every day for the next 30 days, I want you to call a different man and ask permission to recite the third step prayer. One, it connects him up with his fellowship. Two, it gets him used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. That's tough for a lot of us. I don't need any help. I can do this myself. You get used to picking up the telephone and asking for help. So you're connecting up with your fellowship. The third step prayer is also called the surrender prayer, and also going to encapsulate what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, hit a crack, whatever, and chances are he will not. It's a spiritual. We're going to attack this thing on a spiritual level. When you grow spiritually, you're going to be opposed spiritually. Nothing grows without opposition, so be aware of that. I give them an understanding as well. And this is the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Well, thank you, Harold. I know I can count on you there. Well, now it's time for me to be quiet, as hard as that is for me. You know, the number one fear is speaking in public. It's more so than the death of the body, the death of a child, the loss of a wife, home, or even a job, all of that. So at first blush, it doesn't look like much talking in public until you realize that ridicule is death to the ego. And the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanities of vanities, all is vanity. You know what my number one fear is, Harold?
Spiders.
No one will ask me to talk. So we have John Lloyd. John Lloyd is connected up with affordable interventions. We're going to get into that a little later. John's going to tell us what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, and what his passion is to keep a maximum service to God and his fellows. So, John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Joseph. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. So tell us,
you're
welcome. Our pleasure. It's so nice, you know, when the hand of AA reaches out, I reached out and you reached back. That's how the program works. And thank you for your service.
That's how we do this thing.
Well, tell us, so now all of a sudden you wake up and you're in, how did it start out? How did the addiction, alcoholism, how did it start out? What was the beginnings of it? First time you remember when you took a drink or you did a drug and you go, wow, this is really good. I wonder when I could do some more.
It's funny that you were talking about latchkey kids earlier, because that's very much where it started for me. We were the one in the neighborhood that had the swimming pool in the backyard. So it was the kids coming over to the Lloyd Recreation Center, and that turned into the party, and the beer started, and the weed, and it just went on. I guess what really took hold was when I started playing guitar and I was a child of the 70s and, you know, born in the 60s, but by the time the 70s rolled around with the rock bands, Aerosmith, Zeppelin, those guys, I saw those guys and thought, well, you don't ever really have to grow up. You just play guitar and just keep on going like that. And they get loaded, so I'll get loaded. And it started
Let me give
What's
you the
that?
Refrain. Money. Let me give you the refrain. Money for nothing and the chicks are free.
There you go. There you go. That's exactly it. And it was a real good excuse to never grow up. And as it turned out, it went on. I played in the bands and the Sunset Strip clubs, the hole-in-the-wall bars, all that stuff. I made enough money. Sometimes I had enough money to earn a living. Sometimes I didn't know where my next pack of cigarettes was coming from, and everything in between. But the cycle continued the way this disease does, and more it was, I was drinking my bar tab before I even get paid from playing, and doing dope in the bathrooms, and all that fun stuff. Went on
so
for years.
So you really started out as a latchkey kid, though. Was drinking the first thing? Nobody's home. You hitting the vodka
old
bottle,
English,
pouring some water in.
I still remember the old English 800, and that's funny. Yeah, the vodka bottle and pouring water in. Mom's vodka bottle, exactly. Exactly.
And you like that? You remember the first time you drank, and you got that? Wow, I like this. This is. I'm home.
Well, I always felt a little bit out on the fray as far as fitting in. And the minute I started getting loaded, it seemed that this is what I was looking for all along. It was like meeting a new best friend. but everything that that best friend gives in the beginning, it starts taking away towards the end.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, yeah, go ahead, Harold, you're going to say something?
No, that I just, it starts out as what, it starts out as the solution, and it ends up being the problem.
Absolutely. And then as the problem, you continue to try to say, and you know, as the AA book says, you know, my good intentions. It was always about, I'm going to never do this again. I didn't mean to do this. This is, and it, the judge, the world doesn't judge us by our intentions. It judges us by our actions. And my life continued to spiral downhill, just always with good intentions, but it just continued down that same road.
Okay, so now, you're drinking, and of course now the next level is in the rock band, which is, you know, you're playing guitar and you're doing that, and you're hanging out in assorted places, but the music's good, or the music sounds good at least, and you're living your dream in that sense, but really not making any money, but you're having a good time, right? You're a young guy.
Yeah, I'm drinking most of it, yeah.
Well, you know, I was at an intergroup function the other day, and this 15-year-old was there, and his dad's in recovery, and his uncle is his friend and all that, and the kid's having a hard time. And I'll always tell him, I says, look, you old guys we've had our fun. This guy hasn't had his fun yet.
Yeah.
We've had our party. How dare you take his party away? He hasn't been to jail. He hasn't been divorced. He hasn't lost any businesses yet. I mean, you know, come on. He hasn't laid in the drunk tank where the drunk next to him is peeing and there's no way to lay down except next to the drunk. I mean, he's going to miss all that fun. How dare you? Well, that's nothing about me. Okay, so, all right, so let's progress in the band. Let's go. Let's hit the band. Where do we go? Okay, we're in the band. We're going.
Well, the band, as I was saying before, it was kind of like my heroes that I looked up to, though I didn't know them, because the bands I played in, there was enough success to earn enough money to keep going, but I was never, you know, huge or anything. But the guys I looked up to, of course, they started doing the cocaine. So then, of course, I thought that was a good idea, so I started doing the cocaine. And ended up doing a whole lot of it for a lot of years. And then, of course, when the money runs out, the cocaine is way too expensive. So then it became methamphetamine, because that was sort of like cocaine. It's just a lot cheaper, it seemed like, and it lasted a lot longer. So by the time in my 30s...
The only reason I did cocaine, because I liked the smell. Go ahead. All right. So you're into methamphetamine. Speed.
And
let's go
absolutely.
Faster.
And that, absolutely. The speed was a new best friend, and it allowed me to do all the things that made me 6 feet tall and bulletproof again. There was no insecurities anymore. I was Superman. And it wasn't much longer after that that's when the consequences started. The driving under the influence, even though I was usually under the influence of controlled substances, they would call them 502s. And then the possession started after that, and started doing the jail time. The drunk tank, like you were describing, that was wonderful. And
I know the first time was really quite amazing, and then you would think, well, you get used to it the second time. Nah, you never get used to the humiliation. Just somehow,
well,
we lower the bottom.
Humiliation.
But...
Absolutely, the humiliation you never get used to. But the first time I went to county jail, I was full of fear. I was scared to death in there. Then by the time I went to county jail the last time, you know, the sheriffs all knew me. It was like, oh, there's Lloyd. Hey, what's going on?
Hey,
you're back
man.
Again.
Good to see you.
like Otis on the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah,
keep the jail warm.
Yeah, Mayberry's. Yeah.
So it went on like that, paying consequences, going back to jail. I must have gone to jail. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 50 times during my 30s. And
wow, that's pretty good.
I went to jail a lot. Probation violation, probation violation, probation violation. And then California came out with this Proposition 36. And I had pretty much by that time started just pretty much holing up in my garage. Or I shouldn't say my garage, my mother's garage. There was no way I could afford my own garage. So hanging out in mom's garage, smoking speed, trying to stay away from the cops because I always had warrants. And Prop 36 came out, and I thought, okay, maybe that'll be my opportunity to get out from under all this probation violation and warrants and everything that's going on.
What was that, an immunity kind of deal? Or?
Yeah, it was a treatment instead of prison. And that was, I've been to jail so many times, the jail really didn't scare me anymore, but I certainly didn't want to go to prison. And that's what I was looking at. I had so many probation violations stacked up that they were looking at, I was looking at like 8 years in prison by that time. So I was hiding out. And Prop 36 gave me the opportunity eventually, but the disease is so strong that I continued to violate that Prop 36 even after I was granted it. I violated it three times. Finally, the judge said, John, if you don't show up in treatment tomorrow morning, the only thing that's going to beat you to prison is the headlights on the bus.
Mm.
So I finally showed up to treatment when I was 40 years old, and that's when I started growing up.
Same here. I started when I was 40.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys are wimps. I was 50.
Always
you
the look, competition.
You gotta be, a lot of people don't realize that you got to be pretty tough to be a drunk. And to do that, most people cannot have the mental acuity or the physical stamina to be beaten up that much, that long, that often.
And keep going back to the liquor store.
Yeah. So you're 40 years old and you're going to rehab. Okay, we're going to do the rehab. The rehab shuffle.
I got into rehab December 12th, 2001. And I was fortunate enough to go to a rehab that everyone that was there, including the people that worked there, all of them were addicts in recovery.
Mm.
And that was the first time that I was I'd been to a couple of AA meetings when the judge sent me to AA meetings because of 502s or whatever, and I looked at the steps and thought, oh, that's not me, and walked out. Never really thought anything about it. In fact, I was drinking in the parking lot of the meeting. But when I got to this rehab and saw that other people actually got clean and stayed clean, something changed in me.
What do you think? Were you beaten into a state of reasonableness? Was it a broken heart and a contrite spirit?
By the time I got to rehab, I'm nearly 6 feet tall and I weighed about 120 pounds.
Oh, man.
There wasn't much left of me. I, from time to time, look at my intake picture. I have it on my phone to look at from time to time, and just to remind me of just how bad it got. I was a skeleton.
Wow.
Literally a skeleton. It was bad. And then I saw all these addicts in recovery, some of them with, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, all this clean time. Of course, in the beginning, I thought they were lying. There's no way anybody could stay clean that long. But when I saw somebody take a 30-day chip or a 90-day chip, I thought maybe I could do that. And it grew from there. I started learning about the spiritual principles, which I never really learned about growing up. I heard about them, but I didn't know how to apply them. And life started getting better. It just started following somebody else's directions because my directions weren't working.
Yeah, unmanageability, that step one. Yeah, you're beaten into a state of Bill W. would say beaten into a state of reasonableness. And I used to say that for years, and I don't know whether I read it in the big book and then thought I made it up myself, but he came up with that, and that means we become teachable.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can tell an alcoholic anything. You just can't tell them much. And until we can get to the at least to some of that much, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So how was it in rehab? Now they have steps there. Now some of them back then didn't work the AA 12-step program. I think that's coming out more and more now because they're going
I was fortunate enough. The program I went into was 12-step based. It was more based in the Narcotics Anonymous, but they're very much the same.
You know, between me, you, and the doorpost, the singleness of porpoise doesn't hold much water for me. I think it was ill-conceived. I don't see the difference between the illegal drug in the 30s was alcohol and the illegal drug of meth. And, you know, the experience of getting the drug is a little different from alcohol because alcohol became legal, but at one time was illegal. And, you know, we're putting on a united front against addiction. Now, we're not going to have people in OA coming to AA because they want to lose weight, or Gamblers Anonymous are not coming in. No, we're going to get drug addicts and alcoholics. And the thing that really bothers me, it contradicts the third tradition. The drug addict was in, remember the end of the, what would the master do? The drunks were having a hard time with this dope fiend that came in. What would the master do? That's Jesus. They didn't say Jesus, but that's usually referred to as the master. What would Jesus do? Well, we had to let him in. Because if we turned him down, it could have meant his death sentence. And it turned out to be good for him and for AA, and he sponsored a lot of men. Who did he sponsor? Other alcoholics? Other drug addicts? Yes and yes, I guess. But anyway, go ahead, I diverge.
When looking at the steps in Narcotics Anonymous and you replace addiction with alcohol, it's the same deal. The principal difference that I found is that there's a behavior behind the addict. And I'm speaking of myself. My behaviors, because I had never, like I said, never grown up. The behaviors that I had to change came from that process. But the steps themselves, it's the same thing.
Just I'm a real alcoholic kind of guy and who's never done a drug, which I can't believe when the guy was on Mars or something at the time. The kids coming in now mostly come in because of drugs. It's hitting them on the head that much faster. Alcohol's a slow blow. Forgive the pun, but it takes a little longer if you're just doing the alcohol versus the coke and the speed and bath salts or whatever you're doing now. It's bringing them in faster. So we have kids coming in who are drug addicts, and then they drink because alcohol is so readily available. And you know, so I don't see the difference. I try to dig it out. And I think, you know, we're in the same genre of addiction.
Absolutely. But I don't care where somebody gets recovery as long as they get it.
So you work in the steps now in the recovery? Is that it? How does it work?
Yeah.
Did you have a sponsor? Did we do sponsor in there, or
When I had been in there a couple of weeks, they take us out to meetings, and when I'd been in there a couple of weeks, I was still wasn't standing upright. I was so hunched over from the abuse. But I remember meeting my first sponsor, who later said he didn't know whether, because I had long hair at the time, he said he didn't know whether to cut off my hair or cut off my head because I was such a mess. But I met my first sponsor, and he proceeded to take me through the steps and show me how he worked them, which Roger was his name. Roger kept things very, very simple, and that's what I needed. I got the structure at the rehab, and I got the help with the steps from that sponsor, Roger, who I know he's looking down from heaven and couldn't be any happier. He was a good man.
What did the steps look like for you in there?
What did they look like to me?
Yeah, you know, like
by the time I got, like I said, beaten into that wonderful place of open-mindedness, I looked at the steps this time and thought, if it's working for all these people that I'm seeing, maybe they'll work for me. And this was the first time that I had actually looked at them and read them and studied them, went through literatures that actually made some sense. They started to sound like they were talking about me in some of the stories. And they looked like a light at the end of the tunnel.
Now, when I say what it looked like, you know, because did he do like, did you do one step a day, one step a week? How long were you in the rehab?
No, it was more, if I had to put a time on it, I would have to say it was more along the lines of a step a month. I did a lot of writing and a lot of studying. I know the older school version of the steps in AA is quite a bit shorter, but it was about a year program that I went through doing those 12 steps.
That seems to be, when I came to at Post Oak Club, that was the first thing they were saying was the step a month club. And I believe the agreement came from AA pamphlet that suggested not to sponsor someone for a year. So if you took a step a month and it took you a year to do the steps, so now you had a year of sobriety and now you would be available to sponsor. See, the lucky thing is Bill and Bob weren't around to see that. And I'm sure they were spinning in their grave when they saw that. I had a sponsee from New Jersey, Dan, a ship's captain, you know, like a Joe Hazelton type, that kind of big tankers and stuff, a chronic relapse from 94, was working with him. But his home group in New Jersey, they took that year, and their agreement was you had to go to meetings for a year before you could work the steps.
Wow.
Well, you know, that's an interpretation of the year. You know, that's how crazy, that's the how far the pendulum has swung out of whack. You got to remember, originally you did the surrender, which was the first three steps on your knees from the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And then you were
uh-huh.
taken to AA. After you've done that, you had to do the surrender to go to a meeting. And then the restitution steps were done within a matter of days. Now, of course, they only had the six steps. And then later on, we've expanded it to the 12. And then the more we expanded it, the more. But you got to remember, at the time, the recovery rate was something like 50% got it right away and the other 25% shortly thereafter. So the recovery rate was really good on a very short slide. So there's something that's what we're looking at now. I think that's where AA is kind of the ship, I believe, is starting to make the pendulum is swinging back. It probably will swing too far back, like most things. But Bill W. said, AA will change. AA must change. The message is not going to change. This is the right message. This is the correct message for the people we're dealing with. What's going to change is the delivery and
the timeliness of it. You know, we have different cultural aspects of it. That's what's going to change. But the message will stay the same, but I believe we're headed back to a more timely. Matter of fact, I've been preaching this for about 4 years now. They had a group, they call it citywide. Everyone in the city is invited, and at their sponsorship workshop they had last month, the fellow they had up there was preaching 12 steps in 5 days, which is such a wow. huge departure to and because they were, yeah, they were at the Step a Month Club 4 years ago. So there's something afoot. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've talked to people that have been members of little groups that are starting to talk more about doing the AA steps in a few evenings. And, you know, like, again, if it works, great. Whatever gets somebody into recovery, I'm all for. And
sure.
I'm not somebody that's going to say, you know, you have to do it this way and you have to do it the way I did it. I just believe that I'm thankful that it worked for me the way it did. I don't
right.
think that if I had to go to meetings for a year before I started doing steps, I don't think I would have made it. I had to get
that's
into
the extreme.
Or,
it was not all in New Jersey. It was just that one group. And it said some of the groups mm-hmm. in Canada evolved that way, too. So it's interesting to see the evolution now. And there's a reason for that yeah. is because we've lost some ground. People don't know that. But we're coming back around. AA is a great facility. AA really works if you work it. And this is just a little part about growing pains and stretching out a little bit. We're in a renaissance. I like to think of AA. This is an AA renaissance, man. I'm telling you, I could see it coming. Yay.
I was just fortunate that I was able to get in touch with the spirituality nature of my being, and that's what propelled me through where I am today. It's just getting a hold of that spirituality that there's things bigger, there's something bigger than myself. And whether it's a newcomer, whether it's my higher power, it's something besides my own head. Listening to my own head is what always got me in trouble.
What did your fourth step look like? Your fourth and fifth step. How did that look over there?
My first sponsor, again, Roger, he had me do a autobiography type fourth step. It was probably close to, you know, 100 pages. Because, you know, nothing I loved better than writing about myself. I just continued writing.
I might not be much, but I'm all I think about.
I'm horrible at about talking about myself, but I'm pretty good about writing about myself. I could do that all day long. Tell my story, yeah. But
and then the fifth step. So you had to do you had 30 days to write your 100-page essay. Autobiography.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think actually the fourth step went a little bit longer than that. By that time, fortunately, the program I was in gave the clients, as they gained clean time, gave them the opportunity to try going on staff and learning about treatment. So by that time, I had been in treatment for, you know, 3-4 months. And started on my fourth step. So I was working real hard. So it took me a little bit longer than that to write my fourth step. And then the fifth step, I was terrified of. I had to read this thing to this man that I've only known for a few months. And he's walking around the house as I'm reading this thing to him, and he's making coffee and cleaning his kitchen and acting like he wasn't even hearing a word I said, and making little notes on this notepad. And
that's funny.
I'm getting more and more pissed off as I'm reading this thing. And
I can imagine.
I'm in tears. I'm spilling my guts, and he's just making little notes. And I get done with it, and he sits down and says, "So how do you feel?" I said, "Well, Roger, I feel pissed off." what's with those little notes, and why are you walking around here like you don't give a shit? He goes, well, this is for you. This isn't for me. And as far as my notes, he hands me the notepad, and it's got little doodles in it, in a couple of spots. It says, oh, I ought to try that. That one sounds like fun to me. Got the message across that it just wasn't all about me.
That's funny. I think it's hilarious.
No, I did. I think it is now too. But at the time, I certainly felt like, how dare be sitting on the edge of his seat while I spill my guts. But like, he was a real special man.
Well, and you got to remember now, he did it the way his sponsor did it for him.
Exactly.
The way his sponsor did it for him, and the way his, and infinitum, and that's what got me sometimes. Say, well, you know, we're using the verbal tradition for the most important part of the program, and we're playing telephone. So if somebody adds something, which will happen, somebody will delete something, which will happen, and something... So what started out several generations ago looks nothing like it is today.
Yeah, the old telephone kids game.
Yeah, you know, there was no platform of understanding and go like, wait a minute, there's a hole in the bucket here. You know, so people would argue, says, well, what are you trying? You're trying to cookie cutter this thing. I says, no, it's just tools. You know, there's different cars. But it's nice to know that all the tools would be made available if you needed to use a particular tool. I've had sponsors call up, you know, write me and say, you know, I supplement my sponsorship with some of the stuff you have on the website. Great. You can use all of it. You could use some of it. You could use none of it. But just make sure that you know where the toolbox is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So now the fifth step, you say you got over the fifth. Did you have a spiritual experience on five?
I did. Later on that evening, I came, and that was the understanding that I came to, like I was telling you a minute ago, was coming to the understanding that it just isn't all about me and it just isn't all that important. Mm-hmm. The stuff that I thought was just so earth-shaking secret and I couldn't tell anybody wasn't really that big a deal. It was about me letting go of it so that I could move forward. It had nothing to do with how wrong or right it was. It was owning me.
It wasn't really about you even. It was about your behavior.
Yeah.
I'm not judging you, we're judging the behavior.
I was judging myself harder than the world was judging me. I was stuck in a room with no windows and no doors, and letting all that stuff go just opened the door.
I was writing to that today on Facebook. I did a lot on Facebook, Getting Out Room Radio, and the guy said, you know, about hate, you know, because a black man, about the hate crimes with what's going on. And I says, before recovery, I hated myself. But the only problem is I couldn't get enough support to create a boycott.
You're funny, Joseph.
Well, thank you.
That's funny.
It's actually even a little funnier the way I wrote it up. I got to make sure I can go back and get it to get the right wording. I lose them every so often. I get these slashes. I'm to the age now. I don't, it's like a form of menopause. I get flashes. My brain stays open a little too long. Like this sign comes up, still open. Usually most people get a spiritual experience of some kind on the fifth step, and that's how the way it's designed. Not always, but most. I've had some really good experiences on the fifth step. This is the part of sponsorship that makes it all worthwhile. I mean, there's more to come, but the fifth step, and it's out of the 12 and 12, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone, and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step five was the answer.
It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So what it's asking us to do is to speak a fifth step, spoken with complete candor, and done the same with us, listened to a fifth step. Who listens to a fifth step? A sponsor.
My sponsor and God.
Yeah. Well, it could have been a priest or something, but usually it's the sponsor. And there's always an exception. Yeah. If you're going to get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 20 opinions. But most of the time, it's the sponsor. It's the sponsor that's going to listen. And until you've listened to a fifth step, what the 12 and 12 is telling me, I didn't belong yet. I'm still circling the field waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline. And then it's another crash and burn. So five is a real critical step. I believe that's one of the keystone steps. I believe you can do one,
well,
two, three. Go ahead.
That was when I discovered that if I told the truth, the walls weren't going to cave in on me.
Yeah.
That's when I discovered that it was okay to be human and that I could move forward from it. There was stuff from when I was a little kid that I swore I would, it made me different than everybody else, so I can't talk about it to anybody else. And I learned that it just wasn't that important. What started as just knowing that it wasn't all about me became that connection with a higher power, that spiritual being that I became started after that. But I didn't know I was having that kind of a spiritual awakening in that moment, but that's what it grew from, was that moment. It wasn't like the sky opened up and it was like, oh, la, I got this now. But it started
awakening.
That
it's called
a
spiritual awakening. You had an awakening of the spirit. A spiritual experience is in a short period of time called it's a burning bush. You know, Moses saw God in a burning bush, and it was just profound in a short period of time and really intense. Bill W. had the burning bush experience, and it propelled him. Dr. Bob already had Jesus, read the Bible every day, had all, you know, he was a religious man. And Dr. Bob had the awakening, which is line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little, of experience. No matter how profound the burning bush, unless you continue to trudge, you're gonna fall off the cliff. So you're on the, you got your awakening going. Six is the next month. You did six.
Started on the character defects, which for me was identifying them. And once I identified them, began the journey of trying not to act out in them anymore. It was kind of like sitting in a bathtub trying to hold balloons underwater. I'd get one underwater, the other one would pop up. I'd get that one underwater, and another one would pop up.
Good visual. Yeah, I can see that.
Over the course of years, the ones that I acted out in real frequently in the beginning, not so much anymore. Maybe some have even gone to sleep in some sense. But there's always work to be done in that six and seven step for me. Always work.
I agree 100%. That's one of the daily steps. People don't get it. Three is a daily step because we turn it over and we take it back. It's an endless cycle.
Four and five
is about the past. So once you finish the past, unless something in the past comes back up, there's no reason to go back and do a fourth and fifth again.
Yeah, the four and five was about who I was, and then six and seven for me are about who is it that I want to become.
It's ongoing.
And
then eight and nine, well, you know, once you've done eight, you became willing so that you don't have to go back there again. And then nine could take anywhere from a day to a lifetime, depending on your ability to make the amends, right? Some people never, you have an amends that can never be made, or you have an amends, the guy's in Europe and you're waiting for him to come back, all of that. Or you haven't found the person, they disappeared. And when God puts that person in your place, what happens up many times, then you have that opportunity to take that step forward, but not until. So nine kind of just hangs, and some get quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will materialize before we're halfway through. See, that's the whole thing. A lot of people don't realize that Okay, we'll get into that. Okay, so you got 6 and 7, you got that, so you've asked God to take away all your character defects. You became and the entirely ready throws a lot of people off. All the steps except for step one are ideals. So when you say entirely ready, you can only be as ready as you can be in the moment. This is ready as I can be right now. So now I'm entirely ready as much as I can.
Readiness could be much different today than it is tomorrow.
Sure.
Yesterday.
And you're going to grow spiritually, absolutely. And your readiness will be a little bit more. And, of course, 7 is God's going to do it in his time and his way. So now we have to – it's humility. Okay, God,
humility
this is yours.
Is
I did the footwork.
That was the word that always came to me for step 7 was getting to that place of humility, which is what I believe our higher power designed us to begin with. And it was all the stuff that we got in the way with that took us away from it.
Yes, absolutely. I like to think of it this way. Humility is like underwear. It's essential unless it shows. Then it becomes indecent.
Another joke.
Okay, so you got... Don't kid yourself. I get a lot of this stuff and then rewire it. I do a lot like George Carlin. You know, if there is such a thing as reincarnation, that's what I want to come back as, George Carlin. Okay, so you got 6 and 7. Now 8 is about willingness again. And I like to think willingness, the problem with willingness, and it's all about willingness, like a mustard seed. If it's a good seed, it'll grow. But the problem with willingness, it takes discipline. The problem with discipline, it takes motivation. And the problem with motivation is not now becomes never.
Yeah, someday.
Yeah, mañana, but not today. I'll quit drinking and I'm going to quit drugging first thing tomorrow.
There's those intentions again, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a procrastinator lately too. I was just telling my sponsor. Are you there, Harold? Harold's my sponsor also. So this is
I think Harold's got his hands full.
No, not really. A little bit, not bad. Harold is pretty sharp. Harold's pretty sharp. Let me tell you, he's a sharp man. Right? Highly, very learned, and loves Jesus more than you could imagine. So he's quite a learned man. So he keeps me in tow. We discuss things. Okay, so now we got you're an 8, so you became willing to do them all, right? You got your list from your 4-step list. So you moved that over.
Yeah, that was
that was
the deal with 8. Was my sponsor had to just keep telling me just write the list, because I keep calling him and asking him, well, should I put this in? Should I put that in? He says, put everything in. Just write the list. I must have called him 100 times. Do I have to put this thing in that I did with my you put it all in, but you know, put it all in. Just make the list. Stop thinking about it. Just write the list. I finally understood. Just stop thinking about it. One more time, learning about getting out of my head. Just write the list.
He goes like this. You know, I have such a long list. And says, look, that's okay. We'll get the New York City phone book, and we'll start from Z and work backwards.
Very good. Why backwards?
Just change of pace.
Oh, okay.
there'll be less Z's than L's. You know, give him a slow. You know, get him used to it so we can get out.
I just had to ask why backwards. I just had to ask. So yeah, I did the list, and then of course there were the things on the list that my sponsor went through and except when to do so would injure them or others. My sponsor reminded me that I qualified as others as well. So there was a lot of things in there.
There were
a lot of things in there that I had to do little creative things that he would come up with in order to make an amends, but not make an amends where I would be hurt, because I wasn't a good boy out there. Mm-hmm. So the
I have a little different take. I have a little different take on it. I as a sponsor, you know, I try to be discerning prayerfully, you know, and meditatively going over this stuff. But if it hurts the sponsee because of some action that he has to take, Danny B was in my home group, and he tells a story. He was the third man in a felony robbery. And his sponsor, and I know his sponsor, John Henry, told him if he went so far down the scale that if you wanted to attain and maintain long-term sobriety, you were going to have to turn yourself in. He wasn't a married man, so there was no loss of paycheck to wife and children. All these things have to be taken in consideration. And he went to the detective, and he was prepared to go to prison and carry the message to the prison. And that's faith. That's faith. And then Yeah, let me finish. He went in and he told the detective that he was the third man in that felony robbery that got away. And the detective looked at him and finally said, the man who did that robbery would never have come in and admitted it. Why don't you go home? And Danny always ends his talk. Ends his talk with, I'm in AA. I'm in AA for life.
I understand. The the hurting, you know, when I'm talking about me being others, I'm not so much speaking of him protecting me from consequences, because that's not what the case was. It was more about protecting me from injuring those in my life that in turn would, because the man that I was becoming far more sensitive, would injure me in turn as well. And some of those amends, the necessity wasn't there. The only thing that could come from it was hurt. There was no healing.
No benefit.
He wasn't trying to
derive no spiritual benefit from the act.
Exactly.
It would serve no purpose to anyone else either.
Exactly. He wasn't trying to protect me from consequences. He was trying to protect me from further damage.
Okay, sure. That's part of the sponsor's responsibility, having experience in these things. And that's where really Bill W. said, good sponsorship can mean the difference between life and death. A lot of folks miss that. We had a guy in my home group at Post Oak, and he was a well-known kind of guy, a stand-up comedian, and, you know, had his own motivational speaker business. So he was really, you know, an elevated person in most people's eyes. And he would say, you know, my sponsor told me as long as I didn't drink with my sponsee, I was a good sponsor. Hey, wait a minute, I have outrage here. and he would turn around and say, well, nobody I've sponsored ever stayed sober. And I'm going, I can't believe, is anybody listening here? Hello? Joseph, you just, you know, don't get so big in your boots there. Holy, well, I got banned from that club, though, so you can. We're going to work it out, though. I think I'm coming back. okay, so you're in nine, and so you're making your amends, right? You got eight has been cleared up. You can discuss it with your sponsor. You've come to an agreement, however that looked like, and now you're out there doing the deal. So you're bringing in God, your sponsor, you, and the injured party. Ooh, brother, here we go. Hat in hand. What did that look like?
Most of the amends that I ended up having to make were, of course, the ones that I was in most fear of, and that was amends to family members.
Mm-hmm.
Amends to family members, more specifically, my father's second wife. That amends looked more, it was kind of a double deal, because making the amends to my father was one thing, but to my stepmother, who I had a great deal of animosity towards. And I had to make amends to her, not just for what I had done to her, but what I had caused her to live through because of what I had done to my father. She watched my father go through hell until I was 40 years old, watching his son, you know, tailspin into jails and everything else that went on with me. So I know that I caused her a great deal of pain as well. That one was pretty scary. The scariest ones, like her, my mother, my father, as it turned out, they just wanted me to be okay. I thought I was going to get read the riot act, and it was just stay in recovery and keep doing what you're doing, John. We love you. It was simple. And when it's simple, my higher power speaking.
Yes.
So now we have the promises. A lot of people don't realize that. I think it's on 53 is the bedevilments. For every bedevilment, there's a promise. I think there's 9 promises and 8 bedevilments. And for every one, there's a correlating promise. We'll know a new freedom and a new happiness before we're halfway through. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I don't like the slowly. People, they exaggerate the slowly. A lot of the home group slowly, and I'm going, you know, while you were saying that somebody just died, how about just quickly and quickly again? Can we just do quickly? Can we skip to slowly?
Just say it faster.
Yeah, really. Can we just say, yeah, slowly? No, wait a minute. That's what they call it. It's a sacrilege, what they say. When someone goes against the scriptures, whatever they say, blasphemers. You know. No, that's not the way we. Yeah, that's not how. A heretic. Yeah, there he is, that heretic. We do it slowly here, and our father did it slowly, and our grandfather did it slowly, and, you know, hey, who are you to say? Anyway, okay, so now
The longer I hold on, the slower it goes. The quicker I let go, the quicker it goes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think people need to know that this is, that's the timely coming in again. We I believe as AA, sometimes we've developed the spin dry cycle. Keep coming back. That's telling me the solution is the meetings. 90 meetings, 90 days. That's telling me the solution is in the meetings. Meeting makers make it. That's telling me the solution is in the meetings. Meeting makers don't make it. The meetings will keep you sober, but if you're not working the steps, you're not in recovery, and the clock is ticking.
Yeah, the meetings just help. They're just a place for us to get together and help each other.
Yeah, you find your sponsees there. Yeah,
it's an opportunity to learn about what the work is that we have to do, the steps.
Right. Yeah, so I tried to get the program through osmosis. You know what osmosis is?
Well, osmosis, I know. I don't know what osmosis is.
Osmosis when you hit your butt down on the chair and you go to a lot of meetings, and the message is going to come through the floor, up the legs of your chair, up your butt, and into your head, and you don't have to do anything else. You've attained long-term sobriety through the process of osmosis. The only problem is if you can't get to a meeting and the craving comes, you're just pretty well out of luck, big boy.
Yeah, I was going to say the problem being what happens when your butt's no longer in the chair.
Yeah, that's it. Well, and they'll tell you, even if your butt's on fire, you put it in the chair there. You know, like, you know, what if I'm too far away and my butt burns off. Well, take the remnants of what's there and put it in a chair, you know, and keep coming back. Okay, here we go. Where's the mantra? That's the mantra. Keep coming back. And they'll fight you on it. Well, I keep coming back, and I got 300 years of continuous sobriety. I died 200 years ago, but I don't know what else to do.
So does the tree in the parking lot.
Yeah, really. That's a good point. It's funny. Yep. Okay, yeah. So now you got 9. The promises are coming true in your life.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's the 10th step, which is still just about before I go to sleep at night, going through the day. And just thinking about it's always about, was my ego in the way? And usually the answer is yes, and I have to go back and fix this and fix that.
Quickly admit when we're wrong. You know why? You know why it's quickly? Because it's easier to eat crow while it's still warm.
It's so much more freeing than waiting and just, well, what if I run into that person? I just pick up the phone and go, you know what? I was wrong. No excuses. I was just wrong. And even if they had a part in it, that's on them. I worry about what my part is.
What is it? We ask for forgiveness even when the fault is elsewhere. Oh, that hurts. I might not always be right, but I'm never wrong. And if I got to admit, I'm admitting I'm wrong and I was right. Damn. Is there no forgiveness? What's up with that? It's okay, kid. You've done plenty of wrong. There was something else that you were apologizing for. They didn't catch you that time. Think of it that way. Oh, okay. Step 10 is steps 4 through 9 in a single package taken in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, okay. I like to... Well, that's what it is. See, and people say, well, I do all the steps again. I do all the steps. But you don't have to do this. You got 10. Unless something comes up in the past, you don't have to do 4 and 5 again. It's past stuff. So we keep, this is it. We do steps 4 through 9. Is step 10 taking as a single package in the present. And 11 is
when
four.
I'm not diligently working that 10th step is when I start, I notice the spirituality, the gratitude falling away, the joy that I discovered early in recovery, it starts to fall away, and I wonder what's going on with me. And then I realize that I'm not diligently working my 10th step again. And I get back into the work, and there it is again. That
10 is critical. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
10. 11 is, and now, you're working your 10, so you when you're wrong, and then you're making your list at night, we're checking the road, we're checking the hall pass, it's the hall pass check. Okay, let me see, you got your hall pass? Let me see. Okay, you're up to date, you can move on. If you don't, you're not really moving on, you're going back, you're going backwards. It says, our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of a daily spiritual condition. That's why they say 10, 11, and 12 is maintenance. It's really not maintenance. These are growth steps. I'd ask you this. What maintains itself of itself? Nothing. You're either growing spiritually or you're declining spiritually. And if you're declining spiritually, your recovery and even your sobriety becomes tentative. You get shaky on it. So we have to grow now. This is the growth. That's 10. What did 11 look like? What's 11 look like to you? That's a very highly spiritual step.
That's just more about my prayer routine, because I have my prayer routine. There's places where I know where I am throughout the day, where I'm going over a particular bridge. That's a place where I pray. There's things that I have set up that I know this is where I do my prayers. But then there's the contact, trying to develop that contact where he's with me always. And it's I'm better at it some days than others.
Sure.
But,
I'll put it to you this way, John. I broke down 11 this way. Prayer is the quarterback. Meditation is the feedback. And self-examination is the goal line. The unexamined life is not worth living, as a life in recovery is to die for.
Say that last line again.
The self-examined life?
No, the life unexamined in recovery.
The unexamined life is not worth living, as the life in recovery is to die for.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, that's what, you know, I came up with 11. So you do your prayer and meditation on a regular basis. You know, I like to look at it this way. An attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. So if you keep that attitude of gratitude and you're in thanksgiving, you're basically praying unceasingly if you're grateful.
Yeah.
Of course, the character defects.
That's the core of my recovery is when I'm feeling that gratitude, that equates to spirituality for me.
Yeah, it is. It's, people don't miss that. I mean, God's made it really easy that way. Being grateful is really the key to spiritual growth. You know,
the same reason I look at that intake picture I told you about from time to time.
Right.
Because it's where I was taking my life was so dark. I look around my life today and I think, how did this happen? Because it looks nothing like my life did. Mm-hmm. Nothing like it.
So now step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result, the meaning, the one result, that's it. We were looking, we did all this work, we went through all these contortions, all this learning, all this humbling, all of this, but the one, a spiritual experience, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual malady. So we've gotten that. And we're going to keep these principles in all our affairs. Each step has a principle that we keep or try to keep. Of course, they're ideals, and it's a journey, not a destination. And we extend ourselves to the next sufferer in service. And what does that look like to you? What is your service look like?
Well, obviously, sponsoring is important in reaching out to the newcomer, even if they're not looking for a sponsor. Being available, answering my phone when it rings. Being there, but it's not only about the program for me. It's trying to be there for my fellows, no matter what the situation is. I try my best to be there.
Now you do interventions, right? You're in a place now where you have an organized situation where you can intervene.
I started a little business. Yeah. Yeah.
About it.
Well, it's more about trying to, the intervention, it on the surface looks like everybody's going to talk to this addict who's, you know, out of control. But more times than not, what it becomes about is teaching families how to deal with the addict who's out of control. Because every bit of, whether it's the family member that's enabling the addict by giving them money, trying to help, and every bit of help that they try to give them, they use to further their addiction. Or it's the member of the family that's constantly, you did this and you did that and you lousy son of a you know what and everything else. It's about bringing the families together and teaching them what it is that they're really up against. And then delivering one singular message to the addict that they don't have to continue. There's another way to live. And try to get the addict to admit that he needs help.
You know, I'm not that familiar with I've never been in an intervention, so I really don't know. I'm, you know, basically AA kind of guy because I'm cheap and I wouldn't spend the money. So, you know, the wife that drove me into AA had taken all my money anyway. So it was really no choice. I had to do the AA stick. You know, I had nowhere else to go. But it seemed like now if the person hasn't hit bottom, and that's my experience, you got to hit a hard bottom, and that makes a real So an intervention grabs you before you hit the bottom or you've lowered the bottom. We have a tendency to continue to lower the bottom, and some people lower the bottom about 6 feet from the ground, 6 feet under. That's their bottom.
Yeah, well, it's an intervention, I guess, a way of putting it is by raising the bottom so that the spiral can stop. It's giving the opportunity. It doesn't mean that it's going to work every time, but the family needs to take a try at it and try to raise that bottom and let the addict know that he doesn't have to go any further, that it can stop now and he can change his life, or he needs to go continue doing what he's doing somewhere else. Because the enabling is stopping right now.
Which is actually killing the addict, and the family doesn't really get that because he'll stop on his own, but he's got to eat and he needs a place to stay. And, I just can't put him out on the street. I just can't do that. I'm his mother. I'm his
dad.
They
protect him from the very consequences that would actually get him into a place of that surrender that we talked about earlier, being in that place of finally open-mindedness because they're just that desperate. But the enabling protects them from those consequences. So an intervention is to stop that enabling.
Right. I've had personal experience. I had my oldest daughter died, and my ex-wife was an enabler. She didn't get it. She wouldn't get it. And yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I've had two daughters die from the disease.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I almost hate to tell people because they're in more pain about it sometimes than I am. You know, the empathy is really pretty profound, but it is what it is, and I do the Rum Radio, and I do my shtick, and it's a healing for me to try to be of maximum service to God and my fellows because of these experiences. That's the way the program, you know, what's your choice? You know, you got to go forward in life. That's, you know, life's got to take care of itself, and, you know, and I believe that I'm going to see them again on the other side, so I'm not all that upset about. Yeah, I know I'll see them again, one way or the other, I'll see them again. So, and this is a short period, you know, and they would have learned their lesson by now, and, you know, then we have eternity to kick it around, so I'm good. although I'm going to have a few words to tell them when I get there.
I'll bet.
What's the matter with you kids, huh? Didn't you listen? See what happened? So how do we get a hold of you? We're going to have to wind it down. We're just about out of time. I've got about 2 minutes. How do I get a hold of you if I want an intervention? You do that? Do you have a phone number? You got a website?
AffordableInterventions.net. That's one word. Or interventionist@facebook.com.
Okay. Is there a phone number also?
626-476-6528.
Give us again.
626-476-6528.
Okay, and that's affordableinterventions.net.
Correct.
Okay. affordableinterventions.net. All right, so thank you.
Facebook.com.
Okay.
Thank you, Joseph.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed the time. It went really quick. You know, I had a lot to say tonight. It doesn't always happen, but, you know, like, you caught me on an up night.
I enjoy talking with you. I love the Josephisms.
Well, thank you. Most of them are stolen, but I'll take credit.
Very good. Very good.
In closing, I'd like to say, Harold, you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here. I just pulled Affordable Intervention.
He went to sleep.
Website.
Oh, okay, good. Did you have anything? We have about 30 seconds.
Well, I just want to encourage families to really learn something about recovery if they have a child that's in trouble. And give us a call. We can help you begin the process of recovery with your kids. It's a family illness.
Thank you, Harold. In closing, we're in rumradio.org is in 151 countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and way over 300,000 hits to the website. So remember, if you're looking for sponsorship information, it's rumradio.org. We'll see you on the radio. Rum